Hello and welcome to episode 58 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is September 25th, 2017. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we are both of McFlugel.com. The show notes page for this episode is McFlugel.com/58. So with that, as we do every episode, we're going to hand it over to Slappy Jones and he's going to introduce our topic.
Thank you, Rollo, and thank you everyone for listening. Today's topic, we're going to talk about the non-aggression principle again. We had an episode a couple weeks ago where we discussed
episode 45.
Yeah. So I guess that was a little longer than a couple weeks. But time flies when you're having fun. We talked about the non-aggression principle. Today we're going to talk about how would we actually, or how do we think it would be applied in the real world? Certainly, there's a difference between preferable violence and justified violence. So an idea Rollo brings up is, sure, you can eat cookies all day, every day. You can do that if you want. You're justified in doing that. But is it preferable? Should you do that? Should we encourage that behavior? And so we're going to kind of talk about the NAP on that. So just because you can use violence, should you use violence, and how should you use violence? So Rollo, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, like you said, so the non-aggression principle says that it is wrong to commit or threaten violence against peaceful individuals. So that means if someone's not treating you that way, and you know, violating the non-aggression principle, then you're not bound to follow that kind of rule. So there's all sorts of situations where, you know, someone steals from you. You'd be justified in using some degree of violence to get the money back. However, what sort of violence is justified, and when is it not even the best thing to do to commit violence? If someone, you know, is walking by your lawn and steals a couple of grass clippings from your lawn, I mean, it probably doesn't make sense to go violently get your grass clippings back, because it really doesn't mean that much if you don't have those grass clippings. So before we get into this too much, I don't mean to say that there's never a reason or that violence is never preferable. Obviously, if someone's really threatening your life, I think it's certainly preferable to use violence than not use violence and have yourself either maimed or killed. But in the situations between kind of the grass clipping example and the serious harm to your well-being, I think there's a lot of kind of gray area where maybe even though you're justified to commit violence, it's not the best. One reason is that if you commit violence against someone, it kind of reinforces their own violence. Maybe a little bit counterintuitive, but if you kind of just don't really resist violently, it's difficult for a person to continue to be on the attack against you. And that's within reason. I mean, there's a difference. Yeah. If you leave your doors unlocked and everyone in the neighborhood knows they can go rob you, that's obviously not exactly a good idea.
Right.
But do you have some thoughts on that to maybe clear up what I'm trying to say?
I see what you're talking about when you're saying not using violence. Like, so say I'm walking down the street and I see you and you have a nice pair of shoes or a nice watch, and I push you to the ground, start punching you, try to steal your stuff. Are you suggesting not defending yourself?
No, not necessarily. I think that's a situation where...
Well, I'm just trying to clarify what you're saying. Right. So, because now if it was anger, now that seems like a random mugging. That person in that...
Right.
In that scenario probably wouldn't stop because you didn't resist. They obviously have something they want and they're going to take it. Now, I mean, we could go break down the scenario further, but I think if someone was angry, like say I was angry at you and I just was so angry and wanted to fight you, and I started pushing you and you didn't do anything back, that would probably disarm me.
Right.
Because by you showing anger back to me or pushing me, you're now inviting in my mind or in my rationalization or the way we think, I don't know. It's kind of like an invitation to fight. Like I pushed you, you pushed back, let's go.
Right. But and if you do nothing. Go ahead.
Well, if you do nothing, now it's like I'm beating up on a guy who's not even defending himself. Like this isn't even fair. I'm being a jerk.
Right. And if you had the foreknowledge, the foresight to know that if you did start fighting back, that it would escalate to the point where you start throwing rocks at each other. Does it make sense to start fighting back in the beginning? Whereas if he just pushes you a couple times and then you don't do anything back and he's kind of like, this guy's weird, maybe I should just leave him alone. I would say that the latter would be preferable as opposed to getting hit in the face with a rock. Now, again, that's with, you know, hindsight being 20/20 and having that knowledge. But I think it's reasonable to say that a lot of situations that don't really start out as much tend to escalate like that.
Escalate into things that they shouldn't.
Right. And it is certainly, and again, you'd be justified because as long as you're not the aggressor and you're defending yourself to the point of stopping the attack, you're justified. But again, having a rock thrown in your face is certainly not preferable to not having a rock thrown in your face.
Right. And when I say escalate, it shouldn't escalate. I mean, maybe it should. In your mind, you could argue, yes, it should escalate. He hit me. I hit him back. But is it preferable to escalate it if it's going to cause more damage?
Right.
Then maybe needs to be done.
Right. And I'm not saying that these are easy decisions to make, especially.
Yeah, they're also every situation is different, would have to be looked at individually. But
maybe, you know, maybe these situations, it's not you're getting attacked out of nowhere. Maybe it's a slower situation that it's not in the heat of the moment. Maybe someone steals from you and you find out that someone's kind of taking money from you, and instead of going and puffing your chest out and saying, hey, I'm going to give me my money back or else I'm going to beat you up, which you know, probably be justified in doing, you go and say, hey, do you need money? Do you need help? Again, this is not something that I would have a very hard time doing that myself, because I'd be very upset with someone stealing from me. But
I remember there was, well, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think you're fully within your right and not wrong, and maybe even preferable to defend yourself against a robbery, because by not defending yourself, it's possible that you encourage more stealing.
Absolutely.
Those they can steal from you without any repercussions. They probably, I mean, I don't want to say they probably will, but you might be inviting it. So right. I think it's a tricky line we're trying to talk about here. I remember a couple years ago, and it was probably more than a couple years ago, there was someone, and you could probably find this happening every so often, but people steal money from the collection at church. And when it happens, now you don't, unless they find out who it was, if it was like some lady stealing 50 grand and going to the casino and gambling, like, yeah, that's really bad. But some guy takes a couple bucks out, it's kind of like, I mean, do you really want to drop the hammer on him? You're a church, you're trying to feed people, and this guy obviously needed to eat. Does it make it right that you're stealing? Of course not, but I kind of feel bad for the guy. It's like he needed it more than I did or whatever. So I kind of have that approach a lot of times when something were to happen. If someone was to steal money from me, I kind of take that opinion like, wow, this guy's stealing money from me. He must really need that 10 bucks.
Right.
But of course, not always. Like I just said, you have to defend yourself too.
Right. And let's give another example.
Okay. Yeah. I was actually going to pose one if you want to try to running on the fly, because this is semi-real that's happening in my neighborhood right now.
Okay.
So on my street, there was a house that was bought to be flipped. And so they redid everything. They renovated the house, put new everything on. They were making a lot of noise when they did it. And it angered one of the neighbors behind his house. I don't even know who the owner is. It's someone who bought it to redo it. So when they put up the fence, they put up like a wooden, I don't know the technical term, but a wooden fence. You know, I don't know if it's picket. They're all connected. You can't see through it. All the boards are right up next to each other. And on the other side facing their house, painted it all kinds of stupid colors. So, I mean, if we're talking about violence, it hasn't escalated to violence, actually. So maybe this is a good story in this sense. But what if it did? What if now the neighbor behind, who has to look at this fence with all these pink, yellow, blue, stupid colors that make no sense thrown together facing his house, what would you do in that situation? What if he starts throwing eggs over the house and then it escalates beyond that and start doing other things? I mean, we could probably find a real life example where something like that has happened.
Yeah. Oh, so when you said he painted the fence you meant
facing the neighbor's house behind him.
Okay.
Well, so it's a fence in the backyard. So if you're looking from the guy who's renovating the house, if you look out like his kitchen window at the fence, it looks like a beautiful brand new wooden fence. Mm-hmm. However, if you jump the fence and go on the other side, it's got all different kinds of stupid colors. And the neighbor's got to look out his backyard and see this ridiculous fence. I actually drove around the block so I could look through his yard to see the fence. It is pretty ugly.
Huh.
So, and this is a scenario we hear about. What would you do if someone in your neighborhood painted their house pink and you don't like pink houses?
Yeah, that's interesting. So presumably, if you're going to have, you said the guy's flipping the house or renovating
it? Yes, he's going to sell it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's for sale.
Gotcha. Well, it just doesn't make, I'm trying to think of what I would do that would make sense, but I just don't understand it without even knowing what I would do. It doesn't make sense for me to go over to his house and like punch him in the face or something.
I agree.
That just doesn't solve anything. And it just creates anxiety and anger over it. And probably an escalation. Tearing the fence down, I mean, that's not going to really help either.
Well, it's the guy's fence. So, I mean, if you tear it down, you're violating initiating violence against his property.
I mean, I guess the one thing you could do is just go over there and say, hey, man, see, you're doing a lot of work on this house, put a fence up. You kind of finished on this side. maybe bring it up kind of politely. I don't know. It's your neighborhood. What do you think you would do? You're the one that's got to live there. We don't have any people putting up stupid fences where I live.
Yeah. Well, I can't see it from my house. It's about five houses up from mine, though. Well, what the guy did, the guy who lives behind him who's upset about the fence, is he put some bushes up, which are going to grow and eventually fill in. He won't be able to see it from his kitchen.
That makes sense.
I mean, is that fair though? Now he has to spend money to block it. Is it fair? I don't know. It is what it is. If I don't like the view from my backyard, I can put bushes back there.
Right.
But I mean, what I think the guy should do too is he is flipping it. It's for sale. So when the house is sold, why not walk around the block, bring a case of beer or some cookies or something, knock on the door, say, hey, do you mind if I paint your fence? You want to take a look at it on the other side? I know you can't see it from your side. Like 99% of people are reasonable. We would be like, oh my God, I can't believe that it looks like that. Yeah, absolutely. I will paint it for you.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, in this case, the guy was flipping the house. He's not living there. If he's living there, I could see how it could continue to escalate because one guy does something, the other guy does something. But anyway, we're talking about how it would be solved. In a voluntary society, right now we have a government, and as far as I know, they haven't been involved. Doesn't mean they haven't been. I just, from the neighborhood gossip, I haven't heard anyone complaining to the township. So it sounds like they've kind of settled their issues on their own voluntarily by building the bushes and probably thinking, wow, I complain about this guy's noise and he painted the fence. I don't know if I really want to keep going with this guy.
But if we could even take it kind of a step further, and it kind of goes outside of the scope of what we're talking about, but if you had a private society, I'm sure most neighborhoods would be some sort of covenant type thing, or like a homeowners association.
Which so, I don't have one right now, but there's probably, I'll bet you there's some township laws or something. I don't know.
Right. But there would probably be some rule that said, with building fences.
Well, if it's going, I would
making
think
ridiculous fence colors. And when you buy a house in that covenant or HOA, then you agree to not paint your house like that, because there are, you know, if you're the one whose house is facing that ugly fence and you have to, and you end up selling your house, I mean, that could potentially hurt the value. So there's an incentive for them to make those rules of the community.
Yeah. And I'd also say it probably depends on where you're living and where you want to live. I bet you there would be communities for people who want to raise families, long-term housing solutions, short-term where maybe they don't have as many rules, or maybe they have more rules, or really artsy places where you can do whatever you want to your house whenever you want, and people kind of appreciate that.
Right.
It would kind of be something for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And would all be, you know, without using the force
without using violence
of the state.
But again, back to, let's try, I was trying to say, I guess, would the neighbor be justified in using violence in that situation or not?
I would say no.
I would say no too. There isn't he's painting his own fence a stupid color. Where was I going to go next? So is it an initiation of violence to be too noisy?
Well, again, this is one of those catch 22s.
Of course.
Living in the state, whereas if you didn't have a state, then there certainly would be rules about voluntary rules about noise. But again, I think it's just being kind of neighborly. I think most people are reasonable. It happens all the time. Someone has a party and neighbors don't like the noise. I mean, if I've had parties at my parents' house, like high school graduation parties, I'm saying, where neighbors have called the police on my family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are you going to do? It didn't ever escalate after that. The police came over and were just kind of like, you know, try to keep it down, I guess.
Yeah.
But nothing ever happens after that.
Or the neighbor stops by and just says, hey, my husband's got to work at 3 a.m. You mind keeping it down?
Right.
Usually people say, yeah, sure, no problem. I guess there's an off chance someone says, screw you, man. It's my house and my party. But I think those are pretty rare.
Right. I agree.
So
I don't know if I was going to bring up another point about this, taking a little bit different of approach, but if there's a situation where you might have to use violence, you might be justified in using violence. One thing really to consider is whether or not you can actually get anywhere in the altercation. If you can quote unquote win, you know, if it's a fight between Slappy and I, or if I start pushing Slappy around, I mean, if he starts fighting back, I'm probably going to be able to beat up on him pretty bad, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Slappy has a huge incentive to not escalate, not to fight back, and find a, you know, a more peaceful solution to the problem. I mean, parents teach their kids this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use words, not fists, or whatever a saying would be for that.
Here's a better question. Now, say Rollo was to punch me, clear act of aggression, but I weigh about 2.5 times him and I don't even feel it. Am I justified to hit you back?
Maybe not to the. Well, if that's the case, then I'm bringing my tractor to this fight and I'll just run you over.
I was going to say, yeah, in these situations, you need the equalizer.
Right. And that's kind of, that's another point that gets brought up. One that is a good violence preventer oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the threat of retaliation sometimes. So it's you know, you can bring up counterpoints and bring it in certain situations, but it just shows that there's no, just because you're justified doesn't automatically mean that it's the best course of action, that every situation is a little bit different.
Right.
And this idea that, you know, you're chomping at the bit to be like, oh, I can't wait for someone to do something to me so I can, you know, punch him in the face is really kind of a wrongheaded and silly approach. And one that's probably going to get you in a lot more trouble than it prevents.
Yeah. Occasionally I think this very rarely, but occasionally you'll hear people, gun enthusiasts, be like, I dare you to break into my house. I'll kill you. You know, it's kind of like, do they want to protect their house or do they want to kill someone and they're waiting for the opportunity? And
right. That kind of talk always creeps me out.
Yeah. Even from libertarians who other generally are pretty good on everything. And then they say something like that and you're like, you just got some kind of bloodlust or.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. But in a situation like that, we were talking about this before the show. So I'll let you continue. But why do you think it's preferable or preferable? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Do you think it's preferable to use violence only in the last, you know, in what you perceive to be a last resort, and why?
Yeah, I do. And it kind of dovetails perfectly into what I wanted to say anyway.
Right.
It's a lot more usually would be, or at least prima facie is more productive to find a peaceful solution to a problem than a violent solution. One, because violent solutions require a lot more energy and resources usually. Even if you're just throwing a punch, you're literally expending more energy, I would imagine, by throwing a punch than speaking words to someone. But if you take it, you know, less, you know, kind of, I guess a better example of what I'm talking about is that if Slappy and I end up having a fist fight over a dispute, there's a good chance that we're going to just be like, all right, I'm done with that guy. And we lose out on an association. Whereas if we find a more peaceful solution, there's a much better chance we leave the dispute with a much better opinion, or a decent opinion of the other than we would have, if we had used violence. So it's, I don't understand why you would ever say, or given a dispute, would you rather end up hating someone or at least tolerating someone at the end of it? I guess it's kind of a...
I was going to say, are you asking me to answer that? Yeah, of course you want to get along with the person.
So just in that... that way of thinking about it, you've got a much better chance of making friends and making associates by finding peaceful solutions than you do with violence. Not to say that, you know, if you have a fight with someone, because it happens like in the school, growing up, how often did you get into a little tussle with a kid in the schoolyard and, you know, ended up not mattering a week later. Now, kids on the playground are much different than adults.
And when your money's involved or
kids
your job, your livelihood, yeah.
Kids tend to hold grudges a little bit less than adults, maybe for good reason because the stakes are a little bit higher when you're an adult.
I also, as you were going through this little exercise, a scenario, it reminded me of Brave the World a couple weeks ago when she was talking about the gospel and... You know, I don't have the exact quote, but it was something like kindness to your enemies is like throwing acid in their eyes or something, or spitting in their eyes, or Rallo and I are both Catholics, Christians, but pretty powerful words.
Yeah, and I think it's spot on. It's very extremely difficult to live by that.
When someone's trying to pick a fight, when someone's being a jerk at work. Which has happened to all of us at some time. People get frustrated. People get anxiety. They're stressed out. They might not treat people nicely. if you go to that person and smile, they usually handle it okay.
Right. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I don't want to sit here and I know I've stressed it in the beginning of the episode and I want to say it again. I'm not saying that, that you're never justified in using violence, but, and it is in these, in a lot of these situations where, or examples we're bringing up where you're getting physically attacked or having something stolen from you.
Certainly can defend you. You probably should defend yourself.
Right. And it would be very difficult to kind of turn the other cheek in those situations. But if you think about your daily life, how often do those situations ever really come up? I think to get physically attacked by someone, I think is for most of us pretty rare. But if you look to your more day-to-day life where people are kind of maybe treating you poorly or doing harm to you in some way, some much more minor way.
Yeah, even a customer service rep giving you a hard time. I mean, it does happen.
Right. Or you even get cheated somehow, you know, out of your money or something.
Yeah.
And a small thing. We almost never use violence to solve that. And when someone does, you know, can you imagine being at a, you know, at the supermarket and the cashier shorts you by a dollar and you see the cashier stick the dollar in his pocket. So he is stealing it from you. Can you imagine how people would view you if you jumped over it and started, you know, trying to take the dollar back from him? You'd be like,
you'd be a lunatic.
Right.
Or, you know.
So it's kind of
would be saying, I stole your money. You'd be justified to go over there and take it back.
Sure.
Is that the preferable scenario?
Right. There's a much better way of handling it. So it's funny because I keep saying, oh, you know, I know I'm, it's easy to say this, but at the same time, for, you know, maybe 99% of the time, this is the way we act anyway.
Right.
So maybe let's try to continue to apply that kind of thing.
Very good. Do you have anything to add?
No, I just will have a couple of links on the show notes page, mcflugel.com/58. One is the related episode, episode 45, which is titled Exploring the Non-Aggression Principle in More Depth. It'll be a good, because we didn't talk all that specifically about how to correctly apply the non-aggression principle. We wanted this to be kind of a topic where we were assuming that the non-aggression principle was being applied correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple other links. Robert Murphy gave a great talk about prisons in a free society, where although we're so used to the current quote-unquote justice system where it throws criminals into prison, is that violence of that actually justified and preferable, and is there a better way of doing it? And Bob Murphy gives what I think is a very convincing argument on how prisons would look at in a free society, and they would not be kind of the involuntary locking someone in a cage like they are today. And then also linking to a book, Resist Not Evil by Clarence Darrow, which is about really taking more of a pacifist approach to this kind of stuff. And it's, you know, I wouldn't call myself a pacifist because I say that, you know, violence is justified, but he makes a lot of good arguments in the book and presents things in ways that we normally don't think about it. So it really helped change the way I think about a lot of stuff. So it's a book I highly recommend.
It's an easy read too.
It is. So with that, do you have a free market success story? Yeah, we're kind of talking before the show started about, I kind of mashed the screen up on my cell phone pretty good. And I was one of those people that said, oh, I don't break my phone. So I did. And after that, I immediately went out and bought a screen protector and a phone protector. And I'm going to, you know, replace the phone since the smashed up screen is really annoying.
Is it really like shattered pretty good?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's starting to like
spider web kind of.
Well, I feel like sharp points too. So I feel like I'm going to swipe and like slice my finger open. So
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where not the companies cell phone companies don't want you breaking your phone all the time, because they want you to think you have a quality, you know, they want to give you a quality product for the most part. But they also don't mind reselling you the phone, like what happened with me. But that doesn't prevent them and other companies from offering products that protect what you buy. So I immediately went out after I broke this screen in anticipation of getting a new phone. I bought the screen protector and a little phone case. And, you know, there's no agreement when I buy the phone that says, oh, don't put third party equipment on your phone. You know, that would violate the agreement, and I don't even know how that would work. But, you know, there's nothing that the phone company ever does that prevents that, and it's causing you to spend less money with them. But it kind of works out well.
So, what about people who would argue? Because I have heard this argument, that these companies are bad. They want your money. They make you spend. Now the new iPhone is like $1,000 or something like that. And they just came out with an iPhone last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that, pretty much. So they're coming out with these iPhones every year, which is forcing you to buy another iPhone. Or maybe not forcing you, but compelling you or trying to convince you. What do you think about that? Is that... how could the market handle that? Like, shouldn't we, or do you think companies design phones to crash in a year, so you have to buy another one?
I mean, I've kept phones for way longer than a year. So,
but you do hear these arguments, right?
Oh, sure. But if people didn't want to do that, there's enough competition in the phone market that someone could start selling a phone that they designed to last forever, basically.
And if it costs a few more bucks.
Right. And if that's what people want, then they're going to buy it. But I think most of these people that are buying the brand new iPhone, it's because they want to. You know, they're into it.
It's kind of their thing.
I mean, I could walk up to anyone on the street and say, hey, give me $1,000 for this used piece of toilet paper. And I could make a really convincing or try to make a really convincing argument as to why they should buy it. If they buy it from me, that's their choice. They you know, got convinced by an argument. So if, you know, I could resell toilet paper if anyone wants to send me $1,000. I if someone's willing to hear my argument for why you should buy toilet paper from me for $1,000, I will certainly make it. So
if they want one. Yeah. No, I think the market would handle it fine. If there was a company who's designing products that are going to crash in a year, there's several third parties, there's rating systems, there's consumer reports, there's Yelp reviews. People would be saying it, and people would be saying, beware, this phone's really cool, but it's going to die in 6 months. If you spend an extra $50, you can get the other brand, which maybe loses some of the functions of this one, but will last you 2 years. And you can make the decision. Do you want the really cool? And this is assuming, you know, one phone is of better quality than the other, but you can make the decision. Do I want the really cool phone that's going to die in 6 months, or do I want the less cool phone that's going to last me a year or 2 years or 5 years or whatever the case is? So you got to leave it up to the market to decide that. And if people want the things that die quick because they like the gadgets, they like the functions or whatever it is about the phone, that should be up to them and no one else's decision. We shouldn't force any companies to change the way they make a product because they designed it to die in a year. I think that would actually hurt their reputation if they were doing that.
Right. And I think it's the consumers that are driving that planned obsolescence anyway, because
of course
people like the new technology, like the brand new stuff. And when they see, if they have something that's going to last, you know, 5 years and new technology is coming out a year later.
I mean, I remember being in college when the iPods came out. And there was a bunch of Apple geeks in school, and they just waited. They couldn't wait for Steve Jobs to talk. They wanted to see whatever he was putting out, and they were going to buy it, and it didn't matter if the one they were using worked. They wanted to see his new gadget. So I think you're probably right about that consumer-driven obsolescence. People like to have new things. They like to upgrade what they have.
And presumably, by having the planned obsolescence, they're probably doing the consumer a favor because they're probably using cheaper,
Well, technology improves, production gets better.
Well, they're doing, since it doesn't have to last as long, it doesn't need the durability, they're maybe able to make it a little bit more cheaply. And presumably, they'd be able to pass those savings on the consumer, which in turn helps them, you know, sell more products and make a better profit. So it works out very, very well for everyone.
Certainly. And if you don't want the new stuff, you don't have to get it. My wife still has a flip phone. I still have an iPhone from about 4 years ago. So,
yep.
That's the choices we made. I can go get one. They always have decent sales. If I want to get one, I can go get one, but I'm going to ride this thing out.
Yep. Just like I have a tractor from 1971.
Right. That's the second mention, isn't it?
I know.
I don't know the extra money for that, though.
Yeah, and I don't think it carries over for next week. It's
no, it doesn't.
All right.
So on that, you got anything else?
No, just remember, check out the show notes page, flugel.com/58. There'll be links to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, as well subscribe to our newsletter and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and there's a couple other places we are on social media that you can find there as well.
Yeah, so, tell your friends, and if you think we didn't go into something deep enough, or if there's any questions you have for us or things you think we're just flat out wrong on, let us know. We'll respond.
Yeah, this one was a little bit more of a
opinion piece.
Yeah, throwing some ideas out and seeing if they stick. So if we miss something, or you know, you got a better way of handling it, absolutely let us know. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one.
Catch you next week. Peace.